Good evening, everybody. Hello, listeners. This is Leslie Federici, your host and coach of U Smile Radio and coach of the airwaves. How are we doing? I hope you had a great week. I've certainly had a great week, and I'm very happy and excited to be back here with you this evening. A couple of things before we start. As usual, I'm going to give you the call-in number, and if I'm a little slow with the technology, forgive me. Everything's on my desktop, so if you call in, this is the number. It's 1-908-998-2759, and I'll give you that number again. It's 1-908-998-2759. And also, if you go to my profile page on Coach of the Airwaves, if you scroll down way at the bottom, there's a comment box, and I would love some feedback of what you think about the show. And if you have any questions, you can type them in there, or you can go to my website, excuse me, at www.usmilecoaching.com, and you can follow the links to the radio, and there's also a box there. I also put up the show from the week before, so if you missed tonight's guest, you can go to the website and listen to it there. Okay, so I got a great guest for you tonight. She's a business coach and a comedian, or works with an improv group, which we're going to find out an awful lot. And so let me call her in and bring her on in. Gilda, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Leslie.
Hi, Gilda. I'm going to botch up your last name. I know it. Here we go. Bonanno.
You got it. Bonanno. You've got it.
I keep wanting to say Bonero, but it's not. There's no R in there. It's Bonanno. Mm-hmm. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm happy to be here with you.
Welcome to You Smile Radio.
Thank you.
What this show is about is getting people on who have different lifestyles and do different things, and because I really believe that sharing the lifestyles of other people, we help to inspire our listeners to maybe make positive changes in their own lives or gain insight or whatever. So that's what the You Smile show is all about.
Great.
So I'm glad you're here. So why don't we start off by telling our listeners what you do?
Absolutely. I'm a speaker and a trainer and a coach, and I focus on the areas of communication skills and leadership skills. So I help people overcome their fear of public speaking and get them comfortable talking in public and getting their ideas heard.
Mm-hmm. And so this is what you do through what's the name of the company that you work with, that you're president of?
It's actually my own company at this point. I became an LLC, so it's Jill DeVenano LLC. So I work for myself. I've got a great boss most of the time. but I work for myself, and so I'm an independent consultant going to where there are needs, corporations, nonprofits, academic institutions. So I get to do freelance work, which is great.
Oh, that is great. There's nothing like being your own boss, I can tell you that.
That's right. It's wonderful.
And you got nobody else to yell at, right?
No, that's true.
Why didn't you get that done? Oh, well, okay, let's stop there. I know you do something else that's very exciting, too, which we're going to talk about, and that's the improv that you do. But let's backtrack, because I'm really curious how you got to this point in your life. How'd you get there?
Well, it's kind of they say God writes straight with crooked lines. I think that's a great way to describe my career. I've done a lot of different things in the past, but how I got to this particular point of working for myself in the area of communication and leadership skills, training and speaking, is I was, I think, always in my life interested in doing something that would help people. That's what I always put on all those career surveys I took as a kid and in college. You know, I want to help people. And I found through graduate school and other opportunities that I really enjoyed teaching and training in some kind of capacity. I loved helping people overcome their maybe fear of a subject or their lack of knowledge about a subject and get them turned on to whatever it was I was teaching them. So early on in my career, that happened to be American history. I was teaching American history to college undergraduates, a required class at 8:15 in the morning, which is always challenging.
Oh,
but I really enjoyed getting people turned on to history, and especially students who thought maybe they weren't good at it, that they couldn't get it, that this was a topic they didn't understand. I was able to get through that and get them to realize they could understand it, it was valuable, it's something they could do. And so that experience stayed with me when I went into the corporate world, where I found a lot of the same kind of resistance to learning about project management or process improvement. You know, once you broke through that resistance, be it fear or a sense that this might not be important, you could really go far with people and help them to what I call break out of their comfort zones.
Mm-hmm.
And so going through the corporate cycle of layoffs and corporate downsizing and corporate issues, I began to think maybe there was something more for me, that maybe the 9-to-5 path was not one that was going to work for me. And so, to make a long story short, I went into business for myself and took the idea of helping people break out of their comfort zones and training and made it into a career for myself.
Hmm. Well, you sound very bold.
It sounds that way.
Are
after
you?
The fact, Leslie. I can tell you it took me a long time to make that decision, to quit a job, which is what I did. Took a long time, and to have the guts to say, well, let me try. You know, I worked for a long time with a career coach because I wasn't sure what I wanted to do.
Right.
Corporate layoffs around me kind of shook me up a little bit and made me realize maybe I shouldn't be so complacent about my career. So I started meeting with a career coach, and we looked at a lot of different options. But through that process, I began to identify what it is that I was passionate about, which was helping people, training them, encouraging them to grow and develop, especially in ways that they didn't think were possible,
mm-hmm.
and how then we could make that into a career. And I considered, you know, working as a trainer for a corporation or a company or a training company, and that didn't seem to work out or take me in the direction I wanted to go, and so I ended up being an entrepreneur quite accidentally. It's not, you know, it's not like I woke up one morning when I was a kid and said, I'm going to be an entrepreneur when I grow up. That was never in the plan.
Right, right.
So it did kind of happen. It seems brave in retrospect, but at the time I can tell you it was definitely not a sure thing, and I was quite stressed about it. But once I made the decision, everything kind of fell into place.
Hmm. Well, what was the most challenging part for you? Because I know there's many people out there that are in jobs that they're not happy with, that they really want to shift to something else, and I know it's a struggle, you know. And what I like is your area of focus, which is helping people get over the fear. And what was challenging for you? Because I'm sure you had a lot of fear about quitting your job. And
oh, absolutely. I mean, I think the overall fear is fear of failure.
Mm.
You know, I was successful in the job I had, and it was measurable. You know, I got paid, I worked hours, I completed projects, and so there was some kind of validation. Going out on my own, I thought, my gosh, what if I fail? What if no one wants a presentation skills coach? What if no one will hire me to train? What if I'm not credible? You know, all these what ifs that were negative. But I think the biggest thing was going against conventional wisdom. You know, you don't quit a job.
Mm-hmm.
There's the whole financial implications of that. But even that aside, once you've got some backup plan in place, it was really the mental piece for me. Would I actually write a letter of resignation and turn it in and suddenly quit? I mean, it seems so extreme. And I'm not an extreme person. You know, I don't do extreme sports. I'm fairly, you know, I wouldn't say quiet, but I'm not an extreme person. I'm not bold in that sense. I don't think of myself as particularly brave. But
right.
Here I was going to do something that took some getting warmed up to do. It took a while. I should have done it sooner. It took me a long time to actually get to that point where I said, okay, I think I'm going to give this a shot.
So how did your life change? Because here you had, you know, this security of this job, and then now all of a sudden you're changing things.
I think life changed dramatically. I mean, there's the obvious, you know, being master of your own time and that kind of thing. But very fundamentally, I went from being a complainer to a passionate doer.
Oh.
I was a complainer. In the environment I was in, and perhaps a lot of people feel this in jobs where they don't feel they're using all of their skills and they're not moving as quickly as they'd like, or, you know, I didn't feel I was giving 110%. I was achieving just fine, but I didn't feel tapped in. It was work. I enjoyed it. It was interesting, nice people, that kind of thing, but I wasn't in the zone. You know, I wasn't, like, enjoying it so much that it didn't feel like work. And so I complained. Things bothered me. You know, oh, I'm not getting recognized, or this isn't right. And it became this cycle where I just complained a lot. Hmm. And when I left and decided to take ownership and take accountability, I became a passionate doer. In other words, I was able to do things, and I was passionate about them, so they didn't feel like work. And guess what? I had nothing to complain about anymore. You know, all the things that I had been complaining about went away, because now, you know, I was responsible for doing work. If I wanted to work with a client, I have to pursue that. And then I was doing something that I was excited about. So that, I think, was the biggest change for me. And I've noted that even in my conversations with people, that I don't complain as much as I used to, which means I'm happier.
Right.
I'm a happier person.
Well, you're happier doing what you're passionate about.
Absolutely. It doesn't feel like work.
Right.
There are times when I'm in front of a room training, or, you know, I'm with a client who's worried about giving a presentation. I'm helping them through that. And I think, I don't believe they're paying me for this. You know, they're actually giving me money to do this. This is not work.
Wow.
You know, so it's a whole different way of looking at life's purpose and life work.
Mm-hmm.
And I think also, I feel like I'm doing something valuable. Nice bonus.
Was there ever a point in your life when you were faced with a challenge and you had to change things other than becoming your own, having your own business?
Absolutely. I mean, I think we face that challenge, if we're honest and sincere with ourselves, we face that challenge a lot. You know, you face it during major life changes, positive life changes like getting married or buying a house, or, you know, those kind of positive changes still make, you do need to change. So I think that's something that we always have to do, is we always have to reevaluate and change and say, okay, where am I today? Where do I want to be? Where was I? And really start to reflect on those kinds of things. And a lot of us, you know, we don't, because we're so busy, or we don't want to hear the answers to the questions.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's kind of, it's an old cliche, but the only constant is change.
Right.
And it's a question of getting used to that and anticipating it.
Well, the reason why I ask is because I think that when you've had challenges and you've made a change in your life for the better, you build resources within yourself to give you more strength to do it again.
Yeah, I think you're right. Absolutely. You begin to think, well, I did it before. I guess I could do it again.
Mm-hmm.
You
exactly.
Start to believe that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So when your clients come to you, they come for communication skills and public speaking?
Yes, the individual coaching clients that I have will come to me to either help with a specific presentation that they have coming up at work or in a community event, or they may come to me in general because they know this is an issue that they're having, and they're called upon at work to give presentations and they're not able to do it successfully, and so they feel it's holding them back professionally from getting the promotion or being more visible. And so they'll come to me, and we do one-on-one work to put them in the right direction.
So how do you get them to tap in to their I can do it mode?
A lot of it really is mind. It's the mind. A lot of it is, I mean, they're the nuts and bolts and the mechanics of presentation skills. How you organize your material, how you deliver it, how loud your voice is, and those kind of mechanics. But fundamentally, for 99% of the people, it's the mental piece, which is I can do it. So what we do is we identify the fears. What it is that it, what are the roadblocks? If we're drawing a roadmap between where you are now and having effective public speaking skills and all that can bring you professionally and personally, we identify for each person what are the roadblocks. For most of them, it's fear of some sort or the other. And we really drill down into that fear, into what's underlying that, and we start to pick apart that roadblock piece by piece. And the biggest thing for people to understand is that public speaking is a skill. Like any other skill, it can be learned.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are naturally more comfortable with it, but it's just like riding a proverbial bicycle. It's just like any other skill, learning to cook, speaking a language, anything. You can learn it. Anybody can become competent at public speaking. So getting people to believe that and practice that is what I work with them on.
Are there specific exercises that you do to help draw them out?
Yes. I ask, one of the early things we do with people, and I do this one-on-one, and I also teach classes to groups of people, is an exercise where I ask them to think of the last time they had to speak in front of a group, whether it was a formal presentation or even maybe just speaking up at a staff meeting can be disconcerting for some people. And I ask them to verbalize what they hear in their head right before they're opening their mouth. So, someone says, Leslie, give me your opinion on X, and you're just about to open your mouth. What's the tape running in your head? What is it saying? What is that voice saying to you? And 9 times out of 10, it's a very negative voice saying, don't screw up. You're going to make a fool of yourself. They're going to laugh. You know, it's very negative and very powerfully negative. And so we identify that, and then we try to counter that. What can we replace it with? What kind of positive mantra or positive phrase can we replace it with? So can they practice saying before they have to speak? And if people really do that exercise and really try on different phrases and different positive encouraging mantras, that could be very powerful.
Well, the negative voice is so destructive. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And you combine that with the fear, and it just mushrooms, you know?
That's right. And if you've ever had a bad experience in front of a group of people, that's what you remember, and that's what you go to.
Right. Cause
so getting people to work through that it's challenging, but it's very rewarding when you see them make that breakthrough. And they're skeptical. They don't believe it.
Right.
You know, I tell them it's a skill. You can learn it. You can do it. They don't believe it until they start to do it, until they stand up in front of a group and can make it through, until they can think on their feet effectively. For some people, it's even as simple as standing up in front of a group and not having their face go completely red. You know, it's as basic, it's as core as that.
Well, what was one of your most challenging experiences with teaching others with public speaking? Can you remember any particular one that stands out? Because I know as an instructor too, you know, you're trying to teach them something, and then there's one student that doesn't really get it, or it's really problematic. What do you do?
Well, I remember one woman I had in one of my group classes who had this problem that her face would go completely red. She would blush furiously from the neck up just standing in front of the room. So the first time I had her stand in front of the room and just introduce herself, her name and her job and that kind of thing, she went scarlet. And she was shaking, and you could see it. I mean, everyone could feel it. It was palpable, her fear. You could feel the heart beating. And, you know, she made it through her introduction, but then she sat down, and she was flushed and shaking, and she said, you know, I'm never going to be able to do this. This is crazy. You know, she was just in the throes of that, I can't do this, fear. And so after working through some of these exercises and watching some other people, she got up to give her final presentation, and she had made such tremendous progress, and what she had to say was so compelling. Her story of how she, you know, was an immigrant to the United States and how she had found her dream here, and it was just so compelling. She sat down, we all applauded, and one of the other students pointed out, you know what, your face isn't red. And she said, what? She didn't believe me. So I had to pull my mirror out of my purse. I would carry a mirror for this reason. What? Pulled the mirror out of the purse and showed her that she had just delivered a 2 or 3 minute presentation fabulously. We applauded, and her face was not red. And that was a huge breakthrough for her.
Wow.
That she could see it.
So what do you think happened with her?
Well, she just tapped into her self-confidence, which is really what it takes. She began to believe enough that she could do this, and we'd worked on skills and broken it down, and she had done the exercises religiously. I mean, she really was present and focused on it, and it will happen. So she began to believe, hey, I can do this, and she also got more comfortable with it. The more practice you have in a positive environment, the more comfortable you're going to get with it just by doing that, even without doing anything else.
Yeah, and
so
you know,
for her, it's the self-confidence.
And I think what comes to mind with me hearing that story is that probably she was more comfortable talking about something she knew.
Absolutely. It's why usually, unless someone has a specific presentation they're working on, and even if they do, we start off with something they're comfortable with, whether
right.
it's a family or your personal story or vacation or your favorite pet, something that's not threatening as a topic.
Mm-hmm.
Start off with the comfort, and then we build it up from there to the more challenging topic.
Yeah, because so many people are afraid of getting up in front of a group and doing a presentation or a talk.
That's right. It's the most. It's the thing Americans fear more than anything else.
You're kidding, really?
In surveys, they fear it more than they fear death.
Oh my God.
Which means
really?
You would rather be in the coffin than delivering the eulogy.
So, really? Oh my gosh.
Yes. And oh. it's, so, and that's another thing for people to realize they're not alone.
Yeah.
That they're not a freak. And some people feel that, you know, I'm a freak. I can't stand up in front of people. I'm educated. I've got master's degrees, and I still get nervous. And I have to explain to them that it is very common and that they're not alone, that a lot of people share that anxiety.
Hmm. That's amazing. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Number one, huh?
Number one.
Wow. So I'm curious, just to backtrack a little bit, because I hear in your voice that you really do love what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And how did this coach help you to find this work that you love so much? How did you go about fine-tuning it to find what you wanted to do? I'm curious about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, the career coach process was fairly new for me. I didn't quite know what that meant.
Right.
And I believe it or not, I found a bunch of coaches in the Yellow Pages. Who uses the Yellow Pages anymore? I did. I didn't have successful searches online, so I went to the Yellow Pages.
Oh, that's funny.
And I called five or six coaches, and I really resonated with this coach who's in Old Greenwich, Connecticut, Nancy Collamer, who runs a fabulous program called Jobs and Moms. And she doesn't just specialize in moms, but that is kind of
right.
her niche area. And so working with her, we did some diagnostics. We did the Myers-Briggs type indicator. And the purpose of that was just to help me reflect a little bit more on myself and my experiences. But she had me do a wonderful exercise where I looked back at my entire life, all three plus decades of it, and I identified the five or six or seven things I was most proud of, my accomplishments. And that could be something like a job, it could be a grade in school, it could be something from kindergarten. And looking at those as a whole, I think we started off maybe with 10 or 15, and we narrowed it down, and we tried to identify what was that experience about, what was it that I was proud of. And then we looked at qualities of ideal jobs, qualities I valued in a workplace environment. For example, I don't like office politics.
Right.
So I wanted to be in a harmonious work environment, just as an example. And so we had a very long, introspective, reflective experience going through all that. And I began to see the common threads. And then when we got to the end, it was sort of, okay, I want to be in a position where I, you know, I have these certain qualities in my job and in the way I live. Now, what are the careers that fit in with that? And that's how we ended up narrowing it down to the training field, the business consulting field.
Hmm.
And then from there, it was, okay, now how do we operationalize that? What does that look like on a resume? Where do I go? What companies? And then we made it very concrete. So it was a great process for me to go through because she was just, and still is actually, a champion mm-hmm. and somebody that I can write to and say, you know, hey, Nancy, here's what's going on with me. What do you think? And she's still there really as a coach and a cheerleader for me and a
right.
sounding board. So that was invaluable. I can't stress enough how important that was for me to have somebody there who was outside of the process who could really give me some great feedback.
That's a really good exercise, you know. And
oh,
it was
great.
Yeah. And
I took it seriously. I must have written 20 or 30 pages.
Really? That's great.
Yeah, because it worked for me. I like to write to reflect things, and it just really worked. And then in talking it out with her, we began to see the threads emerge.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So any of you listeners out there listening to that, that's a great exercise if you're trying to figure out where you want to go, what you want to do. That's excellent.
Absolutely.
I'm going to do that.
Yeah, it's a great, you know, she had this great workbook that we completed together asking those kinds of questions. What are the top five things you value in a work environment? And I could easily say what I didn't like, you know, the complainer coming out. I could easily say what I hated. And flipping it on its head, what do you like? You know, what do you really value? What are you looking for? And the age-old question of, if money were no object, what would you do?
Well, those are great
questions.
Initially,
you might say lounge on the beach all day. But after you get through that, what would you do if money were no object and you were guaranteed success?
Oh. So what'd you come up with that?
Well, I said I'd have a career where I was speaking, where I was, you know, hired to go give speeches, where I would get a chance. I mean, I had this whole alternative universe I put together. In fact, about 6 or 8 months before I went out on my own, I was at dinner with my husband, and I said, humor me here. I want to pretend I just had a day at my ideal job. And I'm going to talk to you as if I'm telling you about that day. And he said, okay. He's used to me by now. He said, all right, whatever. And I went through and I said, you know, I just had this great speech this afternoon, and it was this wonderful company. And, you know, I went through the whole thing on the speech. And then I said, and, you know, tomorrow I'm going to New York for my book signing.
That's great.
And I went through this whole thing, you know, and I've got some great coaching clients I'm talking to next week. And, you know, just went through that. And it felt so great. And at the end of it, I thought, yeah, why not? What's stopping me? You know, where is it written that I can't have that? You know, so it was that was another great experience for me, and it worked for me, just to pretend, what does that alternative universe look like?
I love that.
I love that. I highly recommend that.
I love that. So you still do that?
Yes, I still do that. And I measure myself and say, okay, I've got the cool coaching clients. I've got some of the fun corporate speeches. How am I doing on the book? Okay, I don't quite have a book together yet. All right, so, you know, is that something I still want to do? Yeah, I think it is. So, you know, I kind of have that conversation with myself, and I run that exercise periodically just to make sure I'm moving in the right direction.
That's very inspirational. My goodness, that's great. Well, you do something else I think is very inspirational, and that is the World of Indifference.
Yes, world-class indifference.
Oop, I missed a word.
World-class. That's okay.
Whoops. That's live
no
for
problem.
You.
No problem. It's not just indifference. It's world-class.
World-class of indifference. Yeah, so tell me about that and how that ties in. And when did you get started, or what got you involved in the comedy end of things?
Well, world-class indifference is an improvisational comedy group that I perform with. And if you've ever seen the television show Whose Line Is It Anyway, or the new show Thank God You're Here, that's improv. We essentially get on stage and make it up as we go along based on audience suggestions. We do public shows throughout Fairfield County, Connecticut, as well as in Manhattan, and then we do corporate workshops. So that's kind of what we do. How it happened was very much serendipity, I suppose. I'm involved with Toastmasters International, which is a fabulous organization that helps people overcome their fear of public speaking. There's clubs all over the world where people meet on a regular basis and practice speaking. It's a great organization that dates back to the 20s and something where, you know, it really helped me hone my own public speaking as well as get a chance to mentor other people in public speaking. So as a part of Toastmasters, I had met some other Toastmasters at the other local clubs. I was president of my corporate club, and then I met some other folks, and we were running different events, one of which was a comedy, just a comedy night for people. And simultaneous to this, a couple of us were taking some comedy classes at local colleges. And the idea got kicked around. The guy who's now our director said, you know, wouldn't it be fun if once in a while a bunch of us just got together and did some improv? Might be good for our public speaking. You know, this is all right. A couple of us started to meet slowly, and word got out, and we recruited a couple of real comedians or people who had experience with improv. And about almost 3 years ago now, 8 of us formed World Class Indifference, and we're still the original 8 performing and doing shows and workshops and doing classes in improv.
Wow. That's amazing. So You had mentioned earlier, I think when we were talking before we went live, that you do this at corporations?
Yes, we do. We have really a couple of different ways we can do that. One is we do public shows, which are open to the public at local theaters, and people just come and you know, have a blast, and it's just for fun and entertainment's sake. We pull people up on stage with us. We get suggestions from the audience, and just a fun evening out for people. The other thing we do is workshops using improv comedy to improve communication skills. Or the example I think I was talking with you about before the call was last week we were at a Fortune 300 corporation at a training program for new supervisors, and the comedy group came in for one evening and ran people through comedy exercises focused on honing and sharpening their supervisory skills. Because the essence of improv is really listening, teamwork. It's not a solo activity. You're always on stage with someone. You've got to work with that person or that team. So it's listening. It's teamwork. It's trusting yourself. You know, it's really all those kinds of skills that we need in business and in life. And so we're able to let people have fun in a training program, but also get them to use those skills and to practice those skills. So I use a lot of those exercises in my own work as well, because there's a real connection. We find when people are having fun, they're learning without even realizing
That's so true. I mean, when you're having a good time, and then the information goes into your head easier.
That's right. And you remember it.
And you remember it better.
Mm-hmm. And we really encourage people to jump in. And certainly in the corporate workshops, we do small group activities, so everyone gets a chance to participate and really push themselves and have a blast, you know, after sitting in training chairs all day. You know, to break out of their comfort zone a little bit and laugh, it's a lot of fun.
So what attracts you about comedy?
I think it's a wonderful thing to be able to make people laugh, especially today. I mean, if you turn on the news,
I know,
it's tragedy,
it's horrible.
Horror and terror. You know, and maybe that's the way it's always been, but it does feel kind of stark. The reality is pretty harsh out there.
Yeah.
And so to make people laugh or enable them to laugh, I think is wonderful, because it just, you know, we know it's healthy to laugh. We know it's good for you physically and emotionally. But just to see people lighten up and have a good laugh, I think it's really therapeutic. It's just wonderful. So to be able to be part of that and, you know, be a part of that in some small way is fabulous.
Well, I think you're right, because I think there's so much heavy negativity that, you know, we don't laugh anymore. We're so busy working and worrying and being fearful, and it's just nonstop. So, like, the good times, those are, like, few and far between.
That's right. We need to learn from kids, because kids laugh hundreds of times a day, and adults laugh a handful, if that.
Right.
So we need to become more childlike in that sense, where, you know, it's okay to be silly once in a while, because that's what we do on stage. We're absolutely silly. You know, I've barked like a dog. I've been a snake slithering on the stage. I've been Michael Jackson. I've been a man. I've done all sorts of crazy things. And it's giving people license to play and to be silly and to not take themselves and their problems as seriously.
Right. Absolutely. Huh. So how long now have you been an entrepreneur?
I've been an entrepreneur, actually. Funny that you should ask, because it's about a year to the day.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. So how do you see your future?
That's a great question. I think the future is really going to be solidifying and honing my current business, and then maybe branching out into directions I hadn't even thought possible or haven't even considered just yet. So it's continuing to work with clients one-on-one. It's continuing to speak to audiences on motivational topics, on humor, on dealing with stress in the workplace. You know, it's continuing to run training programs. But it is also maybe writing that book and reaching out to people in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
maybe it is doing different kinds of classes or teleseminars or podcasts, you know. So it may be reaching out to people in different ways, and maybe in ways that haven't even crossed my mind yet.
That sounds very exciting.
It is. It's fun. You never know what tomorrow will bring.
No.
So I just need to make sure I'm in a place where I can be open to that and, you know, consider that and see what else is out there.
Well, what drives you? What keeps you going?
I love what I do because I can see it makes a difference. And that sounds, maybe it sounds cliched. And, you know, I haven't discovered a cure for cancer, and I'm not doing brain surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, what I do isn't rocket science. It's not hard. But it's important because when somebody's afraid of speaking or they're anxious about it, that's a voice that we don't get to hear. That's somebody who's silent, whose opinion and ideas don't get taken into consideration. They're the one we've written off as, oh, they never have anything to contribute to. And so there's a whole host of voices we're not hearing.
Mm.
And so if I could help somebody get a little bit more comfortable, just a little bit more, about expressing their ideas or volunteering a suggestion, you know, and these are very talented, competent people. Now we can hear their voices. Now we have a chance to get their ideas and their suggestions. And you know what? Maybe one of them has a cure for cancer or a way to bring about peace or just a way to bring some energy or enthusiasm into something. So to me, what keeps me going is I help people eliminate the barriers to letting their voices be heard. And those are voices we need to hear. So that's what's exciting for me and really humbling for me to watch that and be part of that in some small way.
I can imagine. I can just imagine, you know, seeing the rewards of helping someone like that, you know. What would you say to our listeners? Because you never know who's listening.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say there's that silent voice out there. What would you say to them?
I would say that if you're shying away from contributing and speaking up, this is the time to let your voice be heard and to realize this is just a skill. There's no magic here. There's no mojo. It's not something you're born with or you're not. So if you want to overcome that anxiety, you can. You are capable of it. It's a question of practicing and breaking it down into smaller components, and you are actually capable of speaking in public effectively without having a heart attack, you know, without breaking into a rash. You are actually capable of doing that. No one's ever died in my classes yet.
Right.
You know, you are able to actually do that. So I would encourage people to join their local Toastmasters organization or get opportunities to speak, to, you know, work with a coach or work on their own, but in some way begin to tackle that anxiety, because it is possible. You can overcome it.
I think so. I mean, I'm thinking about that story that you told about that woman, and she was able to break through that, you know.
Right, and something you've got to keep practicing. You know, you kind of make the major breakthrough, and then you have a lot of those little breakthroughs. You know, one of my colleagues says it's a small correction practice over time.
Mm.
So it's a breakthrough, but then it's those smaller victories along the way. And it's just, for some people, it's just raising their hand at a meeting to volunteer something, you know, or giving themselves an opportunity to speak at the local, you know, PTA meeting, or just those little opportunities where not everything's riding on it. Your whole future isn't riding on it. So it's a kind of a low risk practice session, you know, to take advantage of those.
That's good. That's good advice. Now, if someone wanted to contact you, how would they do that?
There's a couple of ways. My website is currently under construction. So if they go to gildafanano.com, right now there's just a construction message up there that should be up and running again soon.
Mm-hmm.
But in the meantime, they can reach me via email, which is gildafanano@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
So they can email me directly. And I'd be happy to chat with them. I do in-person coaching as well as phone coaching, because this is something that with some technology help, we can coach over the phone.
I know, it's great.
Isn't it wonderful?
Thank
it's
you,
different
technology.
Than it would have been 30 years ago.
I know, and all this technology, I said, came, and I said, yes, it's time.
It's perfect. That's right.
Well, you know, I'll also put your, your information up on my website, too.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and also.
And they can also check out the website for the comedy group, which is www.worldclassindifference.com. And there I have a bio up and a link on that page as well. They can find out a little bit more about it and watch some videos, too.
Are there videos up there, too?
Yes, there are videos from some of our shows.
Now, which one are you? Because there's a big picture, and I was trying to guess which one was Gilda. There's
all
a couple
righty.
Guys.
If you go to the team page,
yeah,
you'll see a listing of all of us with pictures. I'm about halfway down.
Oh, okay.
So I think in the main picture, I'm the one in the blue shirt. We have a couple pictures that rotate there, so.
Oh, okay.
I think I'm the one in the blue shirt.
Okay.
You know, we've gone through many iterations of hairstyles since then, but I think I'm the one in the blue.
So with a live show, has anything ever gone wrong?
You know, it's funny. It's improv, and we say, hey, we can handle anything. But you know, we were doing a workshop a couple of years ago, and somebody passed out in one of our workshops.
Oh, my.
And, you know, we always would joke, you know, hey, come on stage with us. No one's ever died before. You know, we make jokes about that. And then here we have somebody passing out. We've got the paramedics coming in.
Oh, no.
And so we're on, you know, we've got a full house. We've got a workshop. We've got over 100 people in the room. We're on stage. So we're continuing to perform and do the workshop because we figure it's, you know, we're trying to pull attention back to give that person some space. The paramedics come up to us and say, you know, could you keep the room quiet now? We need to work on this person. And so we make an announcement that there's been a medical emergency. We need complete silence. You know, I mean, this is just unreal. And we're all, you know, praying for this poor woman and just trying to keep quiet. And finally they took her out. She ended up being fine, I believe. She hadn't eaten and, you know, fainted, I think, from the heat. And then we were able to continue. Because at that point, they said, okay, we're taking her out. We think she'll be okay. Please get back on stage. Please continue so the people in the room can kind of get back, you know, a little bit of the normalcy. So that was a strange experience.
I'm sure.
That has never happened before.
So how do you regroup from that?
You know, you just, and as we were ready to regroup, we think, okay, do we call it out? Do we make fun of it? I mean, you know, you don't make fun of things, but in improv, you kind of make fun of even things you're afraid of because that takes away some of their fear. And so we thought, probably not. But it did come up in one of the scenes where somebody, you know, felt uncomfortable or something, or they didn't feel well, and the audience kind of laughed. We didn't play it hard, but the audience laughed as a collective, I think a collective release.
Yeah.
You know, there. So they were able to say, okay, and it was a great workshop. We were focusing on presentation skills, so mm-hmm. I think they got a lot out of it, and you know, we were able to continue forward because that's what you do, I guess. But it was really unreal for us.
I'm sure.
It was great. Yeah, that was strange.
That's
the
thing.
We played in Manhattan before where you're playing a 10 o'clock show on a Saturday night. You've got some drunk folks in the audience. You're getting all kinds of suggestions.
Oh boy.
You know, we've had people come in costumes to shows, you know, all sorts of wacky things. So you kind of get used to rolling with the punches.
Right. Oh, gosh. That's funny. So who are some of your favorite comedians?
You know, it's a good question. I have to admit, I was not a big follower of comedy before I got involved with a group, and that's almost heresy, in the sense that I wasn't glued to, say, Saturday Night Live every Saturday or anything like that.
Right.
But I think, you know, some of the classics for me, if you go back and watch Lucille Ball, for example.
Oh, yeah.
the physical comedy, the facial expression, just incredible. You know, people often think of, when they see the way my name is spelled, Gilda, they also often think of Gilda Radner.
Right.
Who was a famous comedian, and you know, she is just a classic. So there's so many of them. Anybody who's involved now with the Second City out of Chicago and Toronto, the Second City Improv.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, the guys in Whose Line Is It Anyway? All these folks, there's so many of them. But I think for me, what I love to do is look at the everyday humor. So it's, for me, everybody is funny. It's not just the, you know, the Gilda Radners and the Drew Careys and the famous people doing it and the stand-up comics, of course. It's also everyday people because there's humor all around you. If you just look, and I encourage people to keep the humor journal, you know, it's just like when your kids are little and you, they're doing all these cute things and you say, oh, I'll always remember this. And a year later, you forget what funny word they made up.
Right.
The same kind of thing. When you have an experience at work, or you overhear something on the subway or in the ladies' room, great place to overhear things, and it's hysterical, and a week later you forget. So I encourage people to write that down.
That's a good idea.
So you can begin to collect, you know, these funny stories. So I love observing humans. I love people watching because it's hysterical. You know, so if we can bring some of that on stage, some of the real life, because it's about being real on stage. People laugh that kind of an exaggeration of reality.
Right.
So that's, well, you know, that's a lot of fun.
Well, there's this comedian, Kathy Griffith.
Okay, yep.
And I think she's interesting because what she does is she actually researches her shows. She'll go around and take notes and actually go to places. And then when she does her show, they're all based on her experiences in life.
That's great. It's like the inside jokes that the people in the audience will appreciate.
Right, right.
Fabulous to watch it. Or someone like Ellen DeGeneres, for example.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Her timing is just perfect on some of her deliveries. You know, so it's, you can learn so much by watching the professionals in terms of their timing and the way they say a line. And then just watching everyday people, you get some really neat ideas because people are funny.
I know. They are. And you got to remember to have, I always say you got to have humor in life too, because it's what carries you through, I think.
That's right. If you don't laugh, you're going to cry.
Right, right.
So I prefer to laugh any day. I prefer to laugh, you know, and I love it when people are crying with laughter. That to me is, you know, when you got people gasping for breath in the audience because they're crying so hard because it's so funny.
Yep.
That's a job well done.
Or you have a really good conversation with a friend and you know, just that the imagery of your conversation is making them crack up and cry and, oh.
Absolutely. It's just, it's great. And we have so much fun together on stage. There's eight of us. We've been together now for about 3 years, if not more, which is pretty rare in a group like this because people's lives change and we've been through a lot of major transitions together.
Right.
And we just have so much fun. We crack each other up. You know, even if there were nobody in the audience, we would be having fun because we're a bunch of crazy people. But we all have day jobs, so we are a bunch of normal people who are crazy together on stage.
Does your husband get involved?
You know, he's the guy in the audience always laughing. He's the guy with the video camera. He's the supportive behind the scenes. If we need an extra volunteer from the audience, he's there.
Right.
So he's supportive. He understands that I'm a little nuts, but it makes me happier as a person and I think more effective as a trainer.
Yeah.
So
oh, gosh.
He appreciates it. So, yeah, it's a lot. We have fun together and people enjoy seeing that and being part of that.
Well, it kind of comes full circle, doesn't it? I mean, you tap into your humor. And you're able to use humor with teaching and, you know, your clients and people in the corporate world are able to learn these wonderful skills. And it's like this wonderful full circle that you've created for yourself.
Absolutely. It's the sense that all these different parts of my life are really connected instead of having the corporate me. And the home me, and the, you know how we split ourselves up into little pieces and
right.
we show a different face to different groups,
right.
different constituencies and audiences. Here, I feel like I'm beginning to get some kind of wholeness where all these things that I do connect to each other in some way. And that's a great feeling.
I think that's wonderful. Wow. Well, can you believe the time already?
Amazing. Time flies.
Well, I think you've said some really wonderful things. And what's a lasting thought that you have that you're taking away from tonight's call and anything that you would like to, you know, tell our listeners?
I think it's important for all of us to remember that life is really what we make it, that you don't need special permission to succeed and make your life more fun and more enjoyable and more valuable as well.
Well, I think that's excellent. I really appreciate that. Wow, what a great talk.
Well, thank you, Leslie. It's been wonderful to be on your show. I really enjoyed it.
Well, I hope you come back, and I really appreciate you being here, and maybe you'll come back and join us again sometime.
Absolutely. I'd love to do that.
I send you a big hug.
Thank you. You too, and to the listeners out there, thanks very much for listening. Thanks so much.
Okay, and I'll talk to you soon, and I'll talk to you later.
Okay, we'll keep laughing and smiling.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right, Gilda. And there you have it, folks. Wonderful conversation this evening with Gilda Bonanno, and she gave you her website and also her email, and I'll be posting it up on the website so that you can tune into that. And she said some pretty insightful things, I think. Gave me quite a few ideas, like the humor journal. If you're wondering about what to do career-wise, making a list of things that you've done that you've been really happy with over your life, and somehow fine-tuning those things, and that may lead to giving you an idea of what you want to do, and just a lot of wonderful insights. I hope you've been inspired. I certainly have. I plan on doing some of the techniques. So I want to leave you with a quote, and cultivation to the mind is as necessary as food to the body. So keep thinking out there, and keep exploring, keep following your dreams, and I'll be back next week. Wednesday evening, this is Leslie Federici, You Smile Radio on Coach of the Airwaves. Have a great week. And